Thompson. On the show today, we're looking back at some of the best bits from Season 8 as we're taking a little break. We've got some fabulous guests lined up for you. Welcome to Property Matters. Welcome along to another episode of Property Matters. Great to have you here, whether you're listening live on Planet FM or you've downloaded our podcast from one of your favourite podcast sites. Welcome. This week we're taking a break and it's another chance to look at some of the best bits from Season 8. And it's middle way through the season, we caught up with Detective Inspector Callum McNeil from the New Zealand Police. It really interested me because he talked about how to spot and identify and what action to take if you suspect your rental property has become a cannabis grow house. Take a listen. Talk us through some of the telltale signs that a property manager or a private landlord should look out for, especially when they're coming to the house, or perhaps neighbours even.
Yeah, it's just, for one, I think the most noticeable thing that I always notice is that the curtains are always drawn, you know, the windows are always shut. You can't see what's going on inside that house. There's generally sort of no signs of life, so there's not your normal comings and goings of a normal sort of household. You know, you might see high condensation from the house, from the window sweating, from, you know, moisture coming down the windows or the guttering. For me personally, I know whenever I walk up to a commercial cannabis grow house, it's just the humming of the amount of electricity being pumped into that house, and that's, you know, the electricity is stolen from the power companies to generate those industrial lights that are growing in there, to generate or to power the fans, the carbon filters, the ballasts, you know. It's just that humming that you can hear of all of that electricity. So that's something I notice all the time. But there'd be other things like, you know, you might actually see some stuff being stockpiled on the ground or the driveway that you might get a glimpse of, just you know, items used in gardening. You know, often when they're harvesting every 6 to 8 weeks, they need to get rid of the waste plants, so they'll generally packaging them up in lots of plastic bags, and you'll quite often see, you know, 10, 20, 30 black plastic bags all in their driveway ready to be taken to the dump. Yeah, just lots of little telltale signs like that.
You mentioned, you know, the electricity side of things, and my understanding is they can bypass an electricity meter. Is that something property managers or landlords can look out for in particular, or is that a bit hard to spot?
It is difficult to see that. Sometimes they'll put padlocks over the boxes, the metered boxes and that sort of stuff, but it'll generally be, and this is probably one for the neighbours as well, it'll generally be, first of all, someone digging a trench to run an extra cable from the power source out on the street or your neighbour's driveway. So they're bypassing your meter box in your house. And they're not just doing, you know, 5 years ago there might have been just one power source coming in. That would generally be from just under the meter box. So just tap under there, you know, cut a big hole in your jib, connect into there, that illegal source, and then just run their grow house off that. Now they're actually going to the effort, because they're so big, that they need more feed of power from the various lines, so they'll take one off one neighbour on one house, so they'll go to a neighbour on the other house, and they'll feed into or cut into their feeds as well. So, you know, are you seeing people digging trenches? You know, who are these people? Have they got a van that's actually marked as one of the power companies, or is it just a plain van and someone wearing a fluoro top? You know, you see them climbing up the powers. You know, one thing we notice too is that traditional powers, the fuses that are in the power lines, they can't cope with the amount of electricity going into these, you know, these grow houses, so they change the fuses of the, just to make sure they don't blow.
Wow.
And of course that's always a concern, you know, the fire risk.
Yeah. And you've had some literally blow up over time?
Absolutely. Mm. You know, we probably get, just in Auckland alone, I'd say one every 2 weeks, fiends alert us to a cannabis grow farm catching fire. So that's a huge risk.
Yeah, absolutely. And beyond just the plants and the fire risk, what other structural damage are landlords finding once they vacate the property?
Oh, look, you go in, you know, they remove your walls, they cut holes in the walls and the ceilings to put up their carbon filters and their extraction fans. And, of course, the carbon filters are a way to, you know, cannabis has a very distinct smell when it's growing. They need to, you know, keep the air going over the cannabis. They need the lights, the warmth of the lights to help the plant grow. But, like, yeah, every sort of tomato plant. So they're trying to, you know, filter that smell away without alerting neighbours, so that's why they need these great big filters in the ceilings. But they take up a lot of space, they're quite a big unit, they're very expensive, so yeah, they're quite happy to cut away into your ceiling. You know, they're very professional, they have irrigation systems set up for these cannabis plants right through every single room of the house, so we see a lot of water damage because they don't care if something gets knocked over or if something's broken and it's spitting water out into your floorboards. So we see a lot of water damage, a lot of moisture damage, a lot of damage to the framing, to the walls, to the ceilings.
Yes, certainly an investor's nightmare. If a property manager or landlord suspects a clan lab or a grow house, in this case, sorry, is taking place when they've turned up to an inspection, what's their immediate danger and what should they do? You know, they've walked up, they notice the curtains are shut, there's a lot of light on, there's the hum sound that they're hearing. Is this straight a call to the police?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we don't want anyone carrying out their own investigations or making entry to that property. You know, just bear in mind that that property may be booby-trapped as well.
So talk us through that. Why would they booby-trap it?
Again, to protect their investment, their illegal investment. So, and we have seen, you know, doorknobs connected to electricity to give someone a shock. And it's not just, you know, the landlords or property managers, but it's also police. Right. It's also other gangs. And this is one of my main concerns around these organised, you know, cannabis grow houses, is that we've seen a real uptick in violence around them. So other gangs arriving with weapons and seeing it as an easy target, because, you know, if you're growing illegal cannabis, you're not going to go to the police to report that you've been robbed of all your cannabis or cash or your house. So yeah, we're seeing a lot of violence, and that's escalating in residential suburbs, and of course that spills over to the neighbours and everyone else when that sort of thing happens.
Yeah. So as an industry listening to the show, what can we do to be supporting the police better in this space?
Just be our eyes and ears. You know, if you see something that's suspicious, then just report it to either, you know, if it's happening now, 111. If you've got your suspicions, report it via the 105 page, or you can do it anonymously through Crime Stoppers. But absolutely don't take any action yourselves. Just report it. And if you come across it during an inspection, then yeah, same thing. Just report it to us immediately. Just keep yourselves safe. Keep our community safe.
As it takes a few months to a month to set it up and a few months to grow, the inspection process, is that something that should be really spelt out to any tenant applying, that you are going to be visiting the house? I know at Buff and Thompson they do a 1 month check-in and then 3 months after that. Should they be doing everything to deter that person from renting the home?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that will deter them. I've got no doubt about it. If you're telling someone I'm going to be there in a month's time, that doesn't give them time to set up, because it does take a bit of time to set it up. If you're telling them that you'll be back 3 months later, then it makes it, it's not a viable proposition for them to grow cannabis, because they want to be turning that over every 6 to 8 weeks. And if you're coming to inspect it and they know that you're going to do that, then they won't use Barfoot and Thompson, I tell you that right now. And that'll save, you know, your property managers, your landlords, their most valuable asset.
Mm. Yeah, so private landlords, you know, it's another reason to use the experts in this situation.
I learned so much from that episode, and so fantastic to have the New Zealand Police on board. Now, we then caught up with our favourite regular guests, Tarpery Hewitt from Hewitt Mortgages and Jamie James from Jamie James Insurance, on what to do with insurance when people's financial situation is tight or you're going through a rough financial period. They talk about the practical strategies for tight budgets and financial clarity.
Many households are really feeling the financial pinch and pressure right now. If money is tight, what options do people have? You mentioned the payment waiver for 6 months. What else do they have if things are tight?
There are a lot of options. I find sometimes that people can react and the go-to is to cancel insurance. I've done this and I've learnt the hard way. So I often think about this kind of like driving a car. You know, when the road is smooth and life is going really good and you're cruising along 100K and you got your seatbelt on, all is well. So I bought my first home in my early 20s and life was good. I was comfortable. I took out insurance and then I cancelled it because I was young and bulletproof. I don't need this. But as with life, life happens, and sometimes we can hit a hard road.
Yeah.
This could be inflation, job uncertainty, the cost of living, a tougher economy, changes happening overseas. The last thing you want to do when you hit a rough road is to remove your seatbelt.
Mm.
So for me, something happened overseas, the global financial crisis, it impacted us here. My interest rates jumped 10%. I got made redundant, so I had no income and a massive mortgage on my own. So that was really tough. I almost lost my home. So here's three things that we're helping clients with at the moment. Number one, look for savings elsewhere first. So we've helped many clients save thousands just by go on PowerSwitch, contact your house and contents provider. Sometimes you don't even have to switch providers. They'll just sharpen the pencil for you. Your broadband, your mobile phones, all of these things can be negotiated. The second thing is a temporary cash flow adjustment. So what this could look like is we've got a lot of clients that are investing 3% each. You've got a couple 3%, 3% into KiwiSaver. They had a rough road, so they can pause KiwiSaver contributions just temporarily.
Right.
And that's 6% cash flow, which is thousands of dollars a year that can help you navigate through that rough road. And then the third one, of course, contact your financial advisor. Contact your insurance strategist. You don't know, there may be things in your policy like the premium waiver benefit.
Get your mortgage refinanced. One of those important things. The experts. For someone listening today who wants to feel more confident about their finances, where do you think they should start?
In helping thousands of professionals and families all across New Zealand, from average household incomes through to your high net worth, when you do something for a long time, you see patterns. The biggest thing that I talk to my clients about is when it's guessed, it's stressed. When it's mapped, it's managed. And the reason we find this is because people work incredibly hard, but they don't have a clear picture on where they are or a clear map to where they want to go. And so when things get uncertain, AI comes out, people get uncertain about job security or things happening overseas and, you know, changes in governments and things like that. When there's a lack of clarity, that can create a lot of stress. So when we build a financial map for clients, we help them see three things. Where you are today, where you want to go, and how to get there. And so with that, people can make better decisions and then they get better results. So the point is, when it's guessed, it's stressed, and when it's mapped, it's managed.
Now, I asked Tarpley how often people should, you know, do the health check on the mortgage. What about from an insurance point of view, how often should we be re-looking at our insurances?
Whenever your circumstances change. So we always invite clients each year to review things. Most of the time, people will reach out to us when, hey, Jamie, we've bought another home, or we're having another baby, or, hey, there's some whispers at work that there's going to be some restructures. What can I do? So when circumstances change, it's always a really good idea to reach out.
Cool. Tapri, is it easier to get a loan for new builds?
Really depends on the client's financial situation, but it is just like a standard loan. So it's just about conducting a financial assessment on the client. And, there is no difference really in terms of, us assessing a client's financial situation for a new build versus an existing property other than the deposit.
So banks don't look at it and go, okay, there's far less maintenance on a new build, so I'll approve this versus, you know, an old character villa.
Not really, no. Yeah. So it always comes back to a client's financial situation, what their goals and objectives are. Some clients will buy a new build because they can't be bothered with, having to maintain the property, and with new builds, less maintenance, obviously. But with new builds also, sometimes it can be difficult to add value to that particular new build. So townhouses, for example. And then on the other hand, with a villa or character bungalow, there's a lot of maintenance, a lot of costs. It's cold. You need to do quite a few things, which is going to be very expensive. So it all depends on a customer's goals and objectives, their financial situation, and what they expect to achieve at the end.
And where do apartments or new developments sort of sit in the landscape of mortgages at the moment? We're seeing these, you know, massive high rises going up with lots of development happening. Can a first time buyer, for example, purchase in an apartment, or is it better as an investment?
Yeah, again, and I hate to say this all the time, like, it just comes back to a client's financial situation and their goals and objectives. Banks are still financing apartments, no issue at all. But it does come back to what sort of deposit they have. So, they do have an appetite for that.
Do you both work across multiple providers? So you're working across multiple banks, multiple lending agencies. Are you working across multiple insurance? And is it a case of not one size fits all? Do you have to use different providers for different people, or do you have your preferred? Like, how does that work? Start with insurance?
Absolutely. It depends on the client's situation. I'm sure, like, when you get lending, banks like some people with salaries, and they're not so great on people that are business owners or self-employed. So it's similar to insurance. So it just depends on the person's circumstances, what type of insurance strategy they need, and then which insurer is going to be the best fit for them. Ultimately, at the end of the day, our whole focus is you're not to be overinsured. And honestly, like I say to clients, I don't care how much you choose to invest in your insurance protection, whether that's $100,000, $1,000, $10,000 a month, it doesn't matter. What matters is that your investment is going to return for you, meaning it's going to be there to support you at claims time. So that comes down to the devil's in the detail. So our team comb through the detail, that fine print, and make sure that you've got policy wordings that are easy to claim on. And then we also talk about, which we've talked about this a couple of times, Stephen, on the show, is having insurance is important, but how you structure it is even more important. So we literally save clients thousands and thousands in keeping money in their pocket and not going to insurance companies by having premiums structured in a way that it stays the same. So while the cost of living goes up, everything else goes up, their insurance stays the same. Saves them thousands.
Thank you, Tarpley and Jamie. Always fantastic to have your support of Property Matters. We then caught up with Justin, a young property manager who in just over a year went from a cadet to a property manager to head of property management for Barfoot & Thompson's Whangaparoa branch. He shared some of his experiences around that journey.
So what were those first few weeks like? What was the biggest surprise, I guess, you know, coming into property management? What surprised you the most?
Or
I could flip it and say, what was your biggest challenge?
What surprised me the most was, and also the challenge, was that there was so much more than I expected.
Right.
As I said, I mean, it's not just inspections and collecting rent. There's so many aspects of the job that you learn as you go, and nothing is black and white. And then all the experience you get, you know, helps you towards being a better property manager later down the line.
And how do they monitor you along the journey? Are there assessments that you have to complete, or are you just physically watched as you do things? Like, how do you know that you've passed?
We go through the assessments and online modules all at the same time. So we have to pass the online modules as well. So it takes some study on the side.
Mm.
And then we get supervised and do get assessments every now and then from the head of property. And then you get quizzed, you get asked questions for different situations, and then later on, you'll have a final kind of assessment to see if you're ready. And then if you're not, you just have to keep trying.
And if you are ready, do they then place you out in the branch, or is it your job to go and try and find now that next step in your career journey?
Yes, so when you're basically ready to go out, you'll be placed into a branch. They will place you into a branch, and you are essentially there for about a week or two experiencing what it's like working at an actual branch as an actual property manager. And if you like the branch, you get along well with the people, and if the branch manager and the head of property there likes you enough, maybe they'll take you on. If not, you're going to have to
keep trying.
Yeah.
Do you have a personal sort of favorite memory from your time in the training academy? Anything crazy happen?
I'm
putting them on the spot here.
Ooh.
No funny stories.
Something crazy. Nothing crazy. Really, not from.
Okay.
Not from memory.
So, what was it like graduating then at the end?
Graduating, it really felt like a massive win.
Nice.
There was so much support, and you know, this job isn't really for everyone, and it felt like I had keys to a new career. There's a real sense of pride, because Buff & Thompson is a industry-leading company with more than 20,000 properties under management, and you know that if you've made it through the academy here, you're ready for the front line.
That's cool. Who would you recommend thinks about this as a journey, the training academy? I mean, who do you think it suits?
I would, firstly, you would need some resilience, generally organized, and genuinely likes people, because it's a people job, you're managing relationships. If you enjoy a desk job, but I mean, if you don't really enjoy this job where you're staying in one spot, then this might be for you.
We had your general manager on a few weeks ago, and he talked about the fact that one of his biggest learnings in his first year in that role is how much property management is all about people. Your owners, your tenants, your tradespeople, everything's people. Would you agree that, did that surprise you, that the amount of elements to people contact?
Absolutely. I thought everything would be quite black and white, just structured systems. While that is the case, there's a lot of, you know, people element to it. You have to deal with disputes. You have to approach relationships in a certain way to, you know, get the best outcomes.
So then you graduated, and my understanding is you headed off to be a property manager for the first year at the Whangaparoa branch. What was your biggest learning heading there? Beautiful spot to head for your first branch, can I say?
Oh, yes. It was a good area. Moving to Whangaparoa branch as a property manager, it was basically like a proving ground for me. I would say that my biggest learning there was that there's always more to learn in this field. Not every situation is black or white. The Residential Tenancy Act has a word reasonable everywhere, and it can be confusing for many people. This just stresses how important it is for us to stay on top of our new legislations, changes, and being able to adapt to different situations.
So was it easier or harder than you expected? Once you left the safety net of the training academy, you're now not on your own, because I'm sure there was a team supporting you, but you're in charge of a larger portfolio. Was it easier or harder?
It was definitely harder. A lot more pressure. The hardest thing I would have to say is the emotional weight, I guess, in a way. You are dealing with people's homes and their hard-earned investments. And when a pipe bursts at 11 p.m. on a Sunday, you're the one who has to coordinate the fix. And balancing the needs of both the tenants and owners, who might often have opposing goals, can be tricky.
Absolutely. What do you think is the hardest part of being a property manager?
With those tricky situations, you need to make educated, you know, decision.
Mm.
And it's not always, you know, you have to, sometimes it takes a lot of back and forth with your teammates as well, who's had more experience.
Yeah, yeah.
To be able to get there. Yeah.
Backing up that team. How do you stay up, I guess, both yourself and within the company, with all the legislation changes that come from time to time? There's been a lot in the last few years. How do you stay up to date?
We are actually very lucky at Barfoot and Thompson to have a really incredible in-house legal team, and we get regular training and workshops. They're essentially the pillars that support all our property management departments with legal advice, and they hold workshops every time there's a new legislation coming in, when Healthy Homes came into effect as well, and this new PIT legislation. And I would say this is a big appeal for landlords that may be considering, you know, managing their properties as well, because you don't just get the property manager, you get the backing of one of the biggest property management companies in New Zealand and its support system.
Brilliant. You mentioned then, you know, legislation, PET legislation, we had Healthy Homes. How did you and your team cope through the Healthy Homes stage? And do you believe, you know, property managers versus the private landlord, you were able to really offer something in this space?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Healthy Homes standards was massive. It was probably one of the busiest times of the year last year, leading up to July. We managed the inspections, sourced the trades, ensured the 13A statements or certifications were filed properly. Most owners wouldn't have known where to start with specific requirements or heating calculations, things like that. And The thing with Healthy Homes that we have to be careful is the MBIE audits happen not just to property management companies, but individual landlords that manage their properties themselves. And improper documentations or overlooking certain areas, just thinking, you know, the house was warm when I was there. It doesn't really need a heat
pump. Doesn't count.
It doesn't count. And it can cost thousands of dollars in fines.
Okay, so as a property manager, those experts, you're potentially not just saving the money now, but saving potential money in the future when things go wrong.
Exactly, yeah.
Finally, on our Best Bits episode, we caught up with Serena Gibbon from Tenancy Advisory. Serena goes through what compliance means for property managers and property management as a business. She also talks about how AI impacts the property management industry. Let's take a listen.
Now, compliance is a big part of the property management world, and you're somebody that, that runs, talks and unpacks a lot of this, and it's certainly what most property managers sell, but you're calling it the tax rung, the floor, not the ceiling. So if I'm a property manager and compliance is sort of 80% of what I'm doing,
yeah.
Are you telling me that about 80% of my job is about to become worthless?
Not worthless at all. Not worthless. I am saying that 80% of your job will one day very shortly be automated, and it ought to be automated. And once that day comes, you need to be prepared to move your human capability upstream. So it's around transitioning from an operations service provider that's doing admin heavy work to strategic advisory. That's how I see the industry moving. I'll give you an example, Stephen, because I like throwing around the stats as a bit of a shocker for property managers. Late last year, the Ministry of Housing and Urban Development came out with their annual survey, pulse survey they call it, for landlords and tenants, and it reported 72% of owners in this space use a property manager because they think a property manager knows more about compliance than they do. Okay, compliance is the reason 72% of your clients on your book decided to go with you rather than manage themselves. And whenever I speak at events and I raise that number, people treat it like a success story. I see it as a canary in the coal mine. I see it as hugely alarming because if you think about it, as a property investor, nobody I know who owns a rental property ever bought a rental property to comply. That's not the reason. Mm. You buy a rental property to have wealth, to have status, to have symbolism. That's why you have a rental property. Compliance is the tax you pay for that privilege. And when you're swimming in the tax rung, that's telling me you're not in the core group of the owner's strategic advisors. You're a cost center. And that means the owner is always going to be incentivized to negotiate you down and replace you with a cheaper service provider or even AI one day. So I just think, you know, short term, if you're strong on compliance, fantastic. You're going to do really, really well because most owners still will go to you. But long term, if you're building out a business for your 10, 20 years business plan, you got to recognize that this is an alarming number. You got to reposition itself so that next year or the year after, so when the same survey comes out, what I want to see is 72% of owners saying, I'm going to a property manager because they can elevate the worth of my asset and maximize my property's earning power in any market.
And in many countries, they're not called property managers anymore, they're called investment managers.
Yes.
But our New Zealand rules, I think, makes it a little bit harder for that title to be used here, but that's effectively what we want. You mentioned AI just before, and you run workshops on embracing AI. Be honest, how much of the property manager's role can you see changing or being snapped up in the AI space, or is this still a good component that needs that human interaction?
Definitely good components that need human interaction. The way AI is at the moment, if you want to be a run-of-the-mill, nothing special business that produces expected results and it's not particularly impressive, but you know, the numbers work, you can survive and you keep playing that volume game of more doors through the onto your books, you know, I don't think you need to pay a lot of attention with AI. You're going to be fine. But it's not terribly exciting as a business owner. If you're a business owner who wants to really reinvent yourself, be an industry, be a leader of industry, and also rebrand the property management profession as strategic asset advisory and business advisory, I don't think AI can do a lot for you right now, because all the AI, depending on, you know, we talked about this before we went live, your ChatGPT called Perplexity, all these platforms, they give you very predictable results. So can it be automated? Yeah, the low-hanging fruit tasks can be automated. In many respects, for those property managers who are already using industry-designed softwares, there's already a lot of AI interfaces going on behind the background. Anyway, so you're already using it. But long-term, I think I see the use of AI through the lens of
the more you interact with it, the more you invest in your prompting education, the more you understand what it brings to the table and what it doesn't bring to the table, the risk, the inherent risk of using AI, and how you use the AI generated results to complement with your own judgment, your personality, your ability to manage and sustain relationships. That's where the magic is going to happen for property managers.
And if it's working in the compliance space to make things easier, you know, where do you see that leaving, you know, companies and what they're charging, etc.? Is that something that you feel has to be looked at?
Yeah, I think it absolutely has to be looked at. I was at a conference the other day, completely outside of this space, and it talked about how the profession can, with the advent of AI, this particular profession should rethink the way it charges clients, because it is traditionally charges clients by billable hours. Mm. So, and I think in many respects there's some overlap with the property management industry as well. Is you got to like recalibrate how are your clients going to perceive value and understand value. And if AI is interacting with some of the delivery, then how are you going to capture and define the value in a way that makes billing and monetizing make sense?
But if I go back to your earlier statement around the value add that property managers have, perhaps it's then going, so AI is taking this bit out of my work week, what other values can I add? So is it about how do I grow that investment portfolio for my investor, for my owner, and look at other value adds that they can put in? You talked about the parallel between your own experience of being underestimated and what you see in property managers, but there's a difference. You chose to step up. A lot of property managers we seem to feel in this industry kind of just sit in that undervalued space. Why and what can we do about it, Serena? How can we tell these property managers how awesome they are?
Guys, you're awesome. Mind control. No, I just look. I get so frustrated when I look at this industry as an outsider or bystander, I should say, because you know, Stephen. Do you know what the number one thing people say to me when they come to me for advice, and then invariably we drift into more personal chats? The most common thing clients say to me is, oh my God, I can never do what you do. You're so clever. I'm no more clever than any other property manager I've interacted with. I don't know what it is that happened in the course of these mostly ladies and their careers that they're being told that this is not a real career, that this is perhaps a stepping stone for real estate, that perhaps it is a stopgap between motherhood and childcare, that it's just like this pervasive culture of lowering their own self-esteem in relation to anyone, all the other interactions they've had in that space. So I would say this, you know, professional services live and die on information asymmetry. And when you're a property manager, you have so much more information compared to your owner and your tenant. And you need to know how to use that information, firstly, to meet your obligations as under the contract, under the RTA. You meet your obligations under our general agency rules. But also, how do you use that information to advance your own ambitions and your own visions for yourself? And a lot of that could very well be, you know, getting your owners who you know want to grow their portfolio but they're stuck, using your professional network to connect them with mortgage advisors, to accountants, to people who can help them grow their portfolio, on the assumption that if they grow their portfolio, you grow your portfolio. So Ram, how do you position yourself so that you are growing alongside allies?
Thank you, Serena, and we always appreciate your knowledge on the show. And a big thank you to all the guests that took up part of Season 8. Now, over the last month, realestate.co.nz's data has come in, and looking back at March, 6,629 new rental properties were listed. That is down on a 3.2% on a year-on-year. And the national average for rent is also down 2%, down now at $632 per week. The central Otago Lakes District just keeps hitting the highs. They've hit another all-time rental high, up almost $100 compared to March, with the average rental price there at $903 per week. That is crazy, but what a great place if you've invested. We are going to take a little break as we do mid-year. We're going to be back again early June with some fabulous guests lined up for the second half of the year. I want to thank our continued support from Barfoot and Thompson and Planet FM, my fabulous editor, Stephen Zhang, who's had to pull all of our Best Bits episodes together. And you, our listeners, we appreciate you listening in. Now, if you've missed some episodes, head to your favourite podcast sites, Apple and Samsung, iHeartRadio, or you can also find us up on YouTube. If you've got a question or you'd like to come on the show, email us propertymatters@barfoot.co.nz. Stay safe as the summer changes definitely to winter. We'll catch you again in June. Take care.
Well, thank you.